Dvorak, singer-songwriter here in Houston, Texas. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
I'm going blind from the brake lights on this L.A. freeway tonight.
This is Hank Rubicek, producer and lead host of So What's Your Story, the only show in Houston devoted to storytelling. We're coming up next. And you know, since 2008, we've brought you over 500 storytellers, folks just like you, ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. In fact, our show is a perfect example of community radio, and not by accident, we air on Houston's community station, KPFT. And we want to stay on the air for a very long time. And that's where you come in, because we're in a major fund drive, a KPFT fund drive. But you know what? We also need to know what shows move you. And I'm hoping the stories on our shows, stories about lives, despair, jubilation and tragedy, the peak of happiness, the incapacitating feeling of fear, folk tales and fairy tales peppered in to prove that there's always a dragon among us and a bully and a friend. Stories so raw and real, so rich. And when you give your donation, either by calling 713-526-5738, option one, or online at kpft.org, I want you to scroll to So What's Your Story as a show that you like to see stick around. When moved by the stories, you move others with you. And remember, even if a story doesn't end happily, it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
That sweet beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch chimes in, and you know you have found us. It's that time once again for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's found only on Houston's community station, HD1KPFT. I'm Larry Thompson, tonight's host, and you've tuned your radio or your computer or your tablet or your phone to 90.1. So What's Your Story? You listen to 90.1 KPFT HD1, Houston's community station, which is also listener supported. I'm sure you see that connection, and it's pledge time again. You can easily become a member right now or change your annual membership to a sustaining one. Call 713-526-5738. Or you can give straight away at kpft.org. Remember that membership in Houston's community station is truly a gift that keeps on giving. Now let's get to the reason you've tuned in tonight. Great stories. And we're gonna talk about a very particular kind of storytelling tonight with very particular tellers, big old liars. Now, in some areas of storytelling, they get together, these crop of liars, and they have a contest to see who is the greatest liar of the evening. And, you know, it really doesn't make any difference whether the legislature's in session or not. But nonetheless, we're going to hear some fantastic stories. A liar's contest is the participants take turns telling stories and making claims about events or experience that are clearly fictitious. They can be funny, outrageous, or even absurd. And the winner is usually determined by an actual panel of judges. And you know, occasionally there'll be some audience applause as well. But the best way I can demonstrate how this thing works is let's share an example from one of the friends of our show here, Donna Ingham from Spicewood, Texas. Now check this out.
Many of you I know have heard this story because I've been telling it for years, and it is the one that I patterned after that Ozark folktale about the woman who went out to get a pumpkin and she wound up getting stuck inside of it. And so I thought, well, I could do something like that, but I wasn't familiar with, you always want to write about things you know, you're told that, you know, at the beginning of any writing challenge. Well, I didn't know anything about pumpkins, but my daddy raised watermelons. And so then that took me back to the farm that he lived, that he had out south of Brownfield, Texas, up there in Terry County. And this began, so it begins with the truth. I mean, you're going to figure out where the stretching starts, but my daddy, like I said, had this farm out south of Brownfield, and he raised things. He grew things. He liked to grow things. He had cattle, he had horses, he had bird dogs, he had goats, he had guinea fowl, he had chickens, you name it, he'd try it. But it was a farm, right? So he also had crops. He planted cotton out on the back 40. He had alfalfa down in the draw. And every year he had a big garden. Now, up by the house, he would plant tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers. But out in the field, he'd plant quarter mile rows of field corn, black eyed peas, string beans. That was in the spring. In the fall, he planted turnips. Well, every year, my daddy got his picture in the Brownfield News and Terry County Herald holding the longest cucumber and the biggest turnip. Well, then one year in spring, he decided he's going to plant watermelons, and not just any watermelons. He's going to plant them in between the corn rows. No, sir, he was going to plant black diamond watermelons. Now, you may or may not know about black diamond watermelons. They are not your long, skinny, strappity kind of watermelons. And they are certainly not those little bitty personal size watermelons you can get these days at the grocery store. No. They are those great, big, dark, green watermelons. Ruby red on the inside. Big-hearted watermelon. Oh, they are good. Well, now your black diamonds grow big anyway. But this one particular melon got to growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, till pretty soon it was pushing out beyond those corn rows. It uprooted about a quarter acre or so. Well, he got too big for daddy to load in the back of the pickup, take it into town, and get his picture made with it. So he just called the editors of the newspaper and he said, "You're gonna have to come out here this year, fellas. I got something you gotta see." Well, they did. So there stood my daddy with his hand up on that watermelon. Oh, I mean, it was way bigger than he was. My daddy was 5'9" with his boots off. Well, then my stepmother got to thinking about what it was she wanted to take to the county fair that year in the way of canned goods. Now, she didn't enter the baked goods, but she did love to can. And she had a real good recipe for watermelon preserves. So she decided to go up to the field, look over the crop of those watermelons. Well, she had an 8-inch butcher knife with her. And she went up there and she said to herself, "I wonder if that melon is any good," because she looked, of course, at that one that daddy had had his picture made with. She said, "I reckon I better plug it and find out." So she used that big old 8-inch butcher knife. She went over there and started cutting out one of those triangle-shaped plugs. But I'm telling you now, the rind on that melon was so thick that when she pulled that plug out, well, it was all rind. There wasn't any watermelon meat on it. Well, that provoked her some. So she started whacking away at that plug hole, and it got bigger, it got bigger, it got bigger, it got bigger. Finally, it was big enough she could step inside, aiming to get to the heart of that watermelon. You know, I think everything would have been all right if there hadn't been just a little slope to that field, but there already being some strain on that watermelon vine, what with that big old melon on it, when my stepmother added her weight to it, it was just too much for that little old stem, and it just popped right off, and the next thing she knew, she was just rolling head over heels, over head, over inside the watermelon. Well, that melon rolled on down out of that cornfield, took out about a half a mile of fence post, finally wound up over on the county road. and she was on her way to town. Well, Daddy was outside when he looked up and he saw this melon rolling down the road, and then he could hear his wife's voice coming from inside. She was hollering, "The heart, the heart." And he thought she was having a heart attack. So he jumped into the pickup, pushing the case of cannon jars he'd bought that morning at the Piggly Wiggly over to one side, got in behind the melon. Well, that county road made kind of a little bank and turn there as it came into town, and it just kind of kicked that melon right on over onto Highway 82, and she was on her way to Lubbock by way of Meadow, Ropesville, and Wolfworth. Well, that melon was just rolling down that highway. It was forcing cars and pickups and 18-wheelers off into the bar ditch. It was mowing down mailboxes and Burmashave signs, and Daddy was doing his best to keep up. Meanwhile, in behind him now were falling in police cars and ambulances and fire trucks, and there was even one of those traffic helicopters flying overhead. So all Daddy had to do to keep up to the minute reports was just turn on the radio. The runaway melon is approaching Lubbock at a very high rate of speed. It is headed right toward the South Plains Fairgrounds. They've evacuated the midway, and the exhibits area is on high alert. Well, fortunately for everybody concerned, as the highway goes through Lubbock there, it makes a gentle little curve. And the melon didn't quite negotiate that curve, and it just kind of bounced right on over, right into the middle of McKenzie Park, actually right in the middle of Prairie Dog Town. And no animals were hurt in this part of the story. And that melon just started rolling across all those little prairie dog towns, and they must have prairie dog mounds, and they must have acted just like, well, so many speed bumps, because they sure enough did slow that melon down. So by the time it rolled on over onto the South Plains Fairgrounds, it just rolled up and stopped, just as docile as you please, right in front of the food exhibits building. Well, Daddy came screeching around the corner in his pickup, still thinking she was having a heart attack, bailed out, said, "Are you all right, sweet thing? Do you need CPR?" Well, she came crawling out of that melon all red in the face and spitting seeds. She said, "No, I'm all right. I just wish I had my cannon jars, because I don't think I'm going to have time now to get my preserves made." Daddy said, "Not to worry, I got a whole case of jars right here in the pickup. All you need to do is scoop out some of the heart of that melon and stir it up in those jars. Don't even need to add sugar. You know how sweet those black diamonds are. Put a cap on it, you're going to win a blue ribbon for sure." Well, she pulled herself up to her full height, brushed herself off as best she could, did exactly what he said to do, and by doggies, she did win another blue ribbon. And you know, I think the melon would have won a blue ribbon too, if it hadn't had so many miles on it.
Well, there you go. Now, I can tell you from experience, having participated in several liars contests opposite that woman right there, she is tough to beat. That story, can you imagine? And the way she tells it, with all of the motions and the Burmashave signs being taken out, for you young listeners, you just ask your grandfolks what is a Burmashave sign, and they will tell you all about it. Oh, Lord have mercy. I must have heard that story 17 times, and I laugh every single one. The helicopter coming in with the up-to-the-minute reports. Oh. But folks, that is what we're talking about here tonight, a liar's contest story, and that is one of the best. Now, a liar's contest is a unique competition. Participants, they're actually going to compete to see who can tell the most outrageous, the most absurd, and yet the most convincing lie. Now, that story from Donna, you can imagine that it would happen. And that goal of the contest is not to deceive people into believing the lie, but rather to showcase the participants' ability to craft a story. Incredible. Now, our next story comes from Dan Waterhouse. Now, this fella is also a champion liar from Liars Contest. So let's hear what Dan has to give us.
Now, standing flat-footed, how high do you think you can jump? What do you think, 12, 18, maybe 24 inches? Well, you might not believe this, but when I was about 12 years old, I saw a kid jump up in the air about 7 feet high. Now, how can that be? Well, let me tell you about it. One night after supper, I asked my mom if I could go to the movies. She told me no. I said, but Mama, there's a new James Bond movie playing down at the Granada Theater. Everybody's watching it. I want to see it. Please let me go. No, you're not going. So I put on the longest face I could muster, and I whined as long as she could stand it. And she finally said, okay, you can go, but you better be back here before dark, because if you're not, I'm going to take my switch to you. Now, I took that warning pretty seriously, because I was familiar with that switch. So I kissed her on the cheek and off I went. I went down to the movie theater, got my ticket, took a seat in the front row, and I loved every minute of that thing. Well, the movie was over and I was heading up to the lobby, and the special attractions reel started to roll, and I could see there was still a little daylight out there, so I went back to see what's coming soon. I sat there through that, and all of a sudden the double feature started up. And holy moly, it's Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Well, I can probably watch just a couple minutes of it. Now, watching a couple minutes of a movie for me is kind of like one lick on an ice cream cone. It's not going to happen. Before I knew it, that movie was over. I came up through the aisle, out into the lobby, and that daylight was long gone. Man, was I going to get it. So I took off on down the road, running as fast as I could, thinking that every minute that I shave off the clock is going to lessen the severity of the whooping I'm going to get when I get back there. So I came around the side of the Methodist Church and decided to take the shortcut through the cemetery. Well, I'd been through there probably 100 times before, and so that didn't bother me one bit. But this was different because it was nighttime. And it was eerily dark that night, and there was just a little sliver of a moon to guide me. And as I was walking past those gravestones, I was thinking about who I was in there with. Dead people. And I passed underneath these great big trees with these old gnarly limbs just hanging down, reaching down over me, and it started to creep me out, so I thought I better step this up and start running. So I did. And I got to a full stride, and all of a sudden there was no earth under my feet, and I fell down, down, down into a freshly dug grave. Well, I tried climbing out of there, and of course there was nothing solid to grab onto, and the dirt was just crumbling down around my feet. So I thought about it, and I thought, well, if they just dug this hole today, they're probably going to put somebody in it tomorrow. So if I can just wait till daybreak, somebody's going to come and pull me out. So I began to wait. Well, as luck would have it, I heard a twig snap and footsteps coming in my direction. Of course, I had no idea who or what it might be, so I stepped back into the shadowy corner of this open hole in the ground and waited. Well, the footsteps came closer and closer, and my heart started pounding. And then those footsteps were right above me, and all of a sudden, I heard this blood-curdling scream and a big thud down right in front of me. And there was this boy. And he was frightened out of his mind, trying to climb his way out and clawing and sliding back down and screaming and yelling his head off and saying, oh God, please get me out of this hole. He said, I swear I'm going to be a better brother to my little sister, and I'm always going to listen to my mother if you'll just send an angel to carry me out of here and fly me home. And he was just a mess and went on and on, and I thought, it's probably not a good time to let him know he's not alone. So I stood back there and thought, maybe after he settles down and collects his wits about him, I'll let him in on this. Well, about that time, he had exhausted himself, and he stood there looking up out of the hole at that little sliver of a moon. And in a trembling voice, he said, God, don't let me go like this. Don't let the Grim Reaper come and get me. And I thought, well, this has gone on long enough. So I stepped out of the shadows, tapped him on the shoulder, and I said, you're not alone. His eyes rolled into the back of his head. He started to tremble and shake, and he was just swaying like a sapling in the wind. And in a single leap, he jumped out of that thing like a a circus clown right out of a cannon. And that's how I know he could jump 6 feet. Thank you very much.
Well, that's Dan Waterhouse. Now, first time I heard that story, I wasn't sure where it was going to go, but I certainly do enjoy the way he brought it around. And you can imagine bringing in those parts from your own life when you're creating one of these stories, telling your mama you want to go to the theater and she says no, and then you finally let that lower lip just hang out so much you just gonna trip right over on it, and then she lets you go with a warning, you better be back. Dan was in trouble. I hope he survived that whooping he was gonna get. Now, if you're just joining us, we're talking liars and liars contests and one of my favorite genres of storytelling, purposely stretching a story beyond the boundaries of truth. On purpose, you're doing this, no doubt. And sometimes there's a prize involved. Well, one time I was at the Houston Storytelling Liars Contest, and I got to take home a solid gold traveling trophy. How's that for prizes? Well, this is Larry Thompson, and I'm your host for So What's Your Story? Only heard on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station, and 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. Don't forget KPFT's free internet HD2 to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. And we're proud to be here on KPFT. It's Houston's community station. And So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. We got guests that are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell. Now, KPFT can't bring you all these stories and all the music and all the other fine programming without your support. You tune in to community stations like this, 90.1 KPFT, because you know you'll hear the finest and widest variety of programming in Houston. And it's people like you that make all this possible. Call in and give us a little bit of a pledge right now if you want, 713-526-5738, or you can punch on to kpft.org and consider making your contribution a sustaining one, automatically renewing. It makes it so easy to keep on supporting this programming. That's all right. Let's hear another unbelievable tale. Now, this one comes from Rich White, and Rich is, I'll have to tell you ahead of time, this is completely believable to some of us, and it features chickens. And those varmints I've used in stories myself. And this here is Rich White. Give a listen.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever notice that scientists sometimes try to make things better when they should just leave well enough alone? Back in the early days of gene research, the folks down at Texas A&M University created a new breed of chicken. They added turkey genes for bigger breasts. Not a bad idea, you know? But then they added porpoise genes for intelligence. Now I ask you, do we really need smarter chickens? And they added Texas Longhorn genes for, well, actually, I don't know why they added Texas Longhorn genes. Maybe just because it was Texas. They called these new chickens Texas Leghorns. And these are the chickens my great aunt Flo wanted when she decided to get into the chicken business. But you had to drive clear down to Texas to the hatchery to get these chickens, and Aunt Flo was getting along in years. So she asked me and my cousin Dave, who just happens to have one blue eye and one brown eye. She asked me and my cousin Dave to go down to Texas and make a chicken delivery for her. Well, we get the hatchery down there, Steep Holler, Texas. They load us up with 15 boxes of 100 chicks each in the back seat. they might have mentioned something about flimsy boxes, and they sent us on our way. Now, I'll admit, I was driving too fast up that winding road over one of the biggest hills in the state of Texas when we rounded a bend, and there, coming down the middle of the road towards us, was a truckload of chickens. Well, I jerked the wheel to right to avoid a collision, but the car went off the side of the road and down a steep embankment. We ended up on a road just down the hill from where we'd been, but that was the roughest, steepest quarter mile I have ever been on in a car. Those 15 flimsy boxes in the back seat, they all collapsed, freeing those 1,500 chicks. Well, Dave and I looked back there to survey the carnage we were sure we were going to find, but miraculously, we only found two broken wings and one broken leg. And Dave, who'd been through EMT training, was able to set the broken bones and splint the broken limbs using some kitchen matches he happened to have in his pocket and a ball of kite string that had rolled out from under the seat on our trip down the hill. Once Dave got finished, he got out the map to see where this new road we were on went to. And when he did, one of the chicks jumped up on that map, started looking at it like he was studying the route we had marked. Now, this chick must have got a double shot of those Longhorn jeans, because he was head and shoulders taller than the other chicks, kind of a mottled brown color. And this chick had spots on the side of his head that, well, they looked just pert near like little horn nubs. And that chick jumped up on the dash-mounted rearview mirror, sat right there in the middle, looking out the front like he was going to be our guide or something. And you know, it was so cute, we just started calling him Dan'l Boone. Well, we got on our way, and we're coming up to our first turn, and Dan'l goes up to the left side of the mirror and says, "Jeep, jeep, jeep." Now, I know it was pure coincidence, but he got that turn right. And it was even a bigger coincidence when he got the next three turns right, too. But like I say, I know it was pure coincidence. There is no way he could have remembered what our route was. Well, it was about this time I noticed we were getting a little low on gasoline. And then it hit me. We are not going to be able to get out of this car. We open a car door with 1,500 chicks running loose. I don't know if you've ever tried it or not. They're sure, some of them are sure to get out, and you'll never catch them once they get out running around. So we pulled into a full-service gas station to get our gasoline. And we talked the attendant into bringing us out 6 candy bars, 2 bottles of Pepsi-Cola, 5 packs of Juicy Fruit chewing gum, because Dave was partial to Juicy Fruit, and 17 little bags of Fritos corn chips. Well, you know, the chicks looked hungry. We crumbled up the Fritos and spread them out so the chicks could get something to eat. And while we were stopped, we decided to switch drivers, which would have been a whole lot easier if we'd been able to get out of the car. But Dave and I wiggled and we squirmed, and we finally got Dave in the driver's seat and me in the passenger seat. And I want to tell you, we did not squish a single little chick in the process, which was no easy feat. Well, we got back on the road, and we were making pretty good time. We'd crossed into Oklahoma, coming up to Bug Tussle. We hear this racket coming from the back seat as 987 voices in unison are chanting, "Jeep, jeep, jeep, jeep." Well, I looked back there to see what in the world was going on, and there, standing in formation across the back seat, the chicks had spelled out D-R-I-N-K. I don't know. I guess it was the salty corn chips that made them thirsty. So we pulled into Sonic there in Bug Tussle. We didn't think it'd be a good idea to give Pepsi-Cola to these little chicks, you know? So we ordered 5 large 7-Ups, an empty cup, and 9 extra straws. We poked pinholes along the length of those straws, stuck the straws together end for end, stuck one end of that end of the empty cup, sealed all the joints with Juicy Fruit chewing gum, and had ourselves a drip watering system so those chicks could all get a drink. Well, once they got finished, why, we got back on the road. But we had not gone a quarter of a mile till Dave hit this big pothole. This pothole jarred us. Why, it jarred us so much, Dave's glass eye popped out and rolled on the floor. Now, we couldn't really see the eye because of all the chicks down there, but we could follow its path as the chicks were bowled over as it rolled back and forth. Well, sir, I finally caught the eye and was just getting ready to hand it back to David when we heard jip, 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 coming from Dan O'Boone. Dave looks up. What's he see? But another truckload of chickens. This one is stalled in the road right in front of us. Dave hit the brake with both feet. Chicks inside that car just flew everywhere. Dave's other glass eye popped out, but I caught it before it got to the floor. And remarkably, our car stopped before running into that truckload of chickens. Well, sir, I gave Dave back his blue eye and his brown eye, and he rinsed each one of them off in his mouth before popping it back in. Then he pulled the car over to the side of the road, and that's when we noticed the crack in the windshield. And there, laying on the dash, was Dan O'Boone, unconscious and not breathing. Well, Dave put his EMT training to use again, quickly started mouth-to-beak resuscitation. And Dan O'Boone, that tough little old bird, was conscious and breathing on his own again in no time. But his horn nub had cracked that windshield. Dan had a goose egg the size of a kidney bean on the side of his head. I cut off a strip of Kleenex, and Dave expertly wrapped it around Dan's head, sealed it in place with a little wad of Juicy Fruit chewing gum, and we laid Dan out there in the open Kleenex box to recuperate. Well, we hadn't even had time to get back on our way when what should come barreling down the road but a runaway gasoline truck. The driver of the truck had time to jump out just before that truck crashed in to that truckload of chickens and exploded. Luckily, we had a blanket in the car we threw over all of our chicks so they didn't have to witness as hundreds, if not thousands, of perfectly roasted chickens rained down out of the sky. We were there for better than 2 hours while the town folks were there picking up those chickens and putting them in grocery sacks to take home. They finally got the road cleared. We made it back on our way. Made it the rest of the way to Aunt Flo's down there at Clark's Fork, just south of Boonville. I don't know if any of you know it or not. But when we got there, we asked Aunt Flo how we're supposed to get these chicks from the car into the chicken house without them getting loose and running all over the place. All Aunt Flo said was, "Chicken cooker!" and ran back in the house. Now, for any of you that don't already know, a chicken clucker is a yellow plastic chicken beak that fit over Aunt Flo's nose and mouth. And when Aunt Flo talked American into the chicken clucker, it translated whatever she said into chicken. Aunt Flo set the dial for Leghorn dialect, gave a few clucks, and those chicks all snapped to attention and started lining up in rows. Aunt Flo opened the back door, put up a board for a ramp, gave a few more clucks, and those chicks started marching down that ramp two by two, led by Dan O'Boone with his head all wrapped up, and Pegleg, who was now walking with a crutch made from the short end of a broken straw and held together with Juicy Fruit chewing gum. And they followed Aunt Flo right into that chicken house just as pretty as you please. Now, I'm sorry to report the chicken business did not work out as planned for Aunt Flo. By the time those chickens got big enough to sell, Aunt Flo was so attached to them she couldn't send them off to the slaughterhouse. Those chickens' genes were so messed up, none of them ever laid any eggs. And the expenses really started cutting into Aunt Flo's savings. And I'm not talking just chicken feed here. Those chicks learned to communicate better and they started asking for things. Things I don't think they made good use of. For example, I don't think a one of those chicks ever got past hunt and peck typing on those computers they had slow by. Though I have to admit, the royalties off that book they managed to peck out were a real godsend for Aunt Flo. And by the way, in case you're interested, I checked, they got a copy of the book here at the library. 1,500 Uses for Juicy Fruit Chewing Gum by Daniel Leghorn Boone. I thank you.
Well, there you go. Daniel Leghorn Boone. That right there, that's Rich White from Missouri telling a fabulous tale. And we're here on the radio with you this evening on So What's Your Story, right here coming to you from Houston. And Houston is H-Town, and H-Town is Storytown. And this show started it all way back when, 2008 or something. And we were the first storytelling platform in Houston, and how it has grown. Now let's start and talk a minute about our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. That's a great place to learn about the art of telling. And they meet virtually on the fourth Tuesday of every month, about 7 p.m. The next swap is in just a couple of weeks, and you can find out the information on their website at www.HoustonStorytellers.org. That'll have a Zoom and all the location information and everything like that. Also, they are kind enough to put up on their website, under the link of radio program, past episodes of So What's Your Story? Programs ever since this thing got started. And you know what else? They got themselves a liars contest coming up. The details are right there on that webpage. You can sign up to tell or hear. And either way, you're going to laugh your tail off. Now, our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live are back in full swing the second Tuesday of the month. And you're going to enjoy even more astonishing tales there and get to know Houston's storytelling community. Another way you can crank up your storytelling skills, of course, is joining up with the Tejas Storytelling Association up in Denton. And then, of course, the National Storytelling Network as well. And you folks, let me just be the first one, if you haven't heard already, to remind you that your support of KPFT is like a sturdy corner in a big old green pasture. You know, those corner posts have to be in deeper and bigger and broader than any of the other posts. They hold everything together as that stress comes up on the fence. And well, if the fence falls over and the cows get out, you know that spells trouble. And you know, more appropriately, without your help, we can't continue to bring you great stories and great storytellers like the ones you're hearing tonight. And it's so easy, just call 713-526-5738 or check out kpft.org. Now, here's another fantastic lie from a woman named Shane Larango. Now, I want you to picture this in your mind's eye. Shane's a tall drink of water. And from your vantage point, you can't see that she's got explosive red curly hair. And she's wearing the fanciest boots this side of Gillies. Here's Shane Larango.
Girl, those boots are made for lying. This is really going to work out for me. This incident all started when my husband and I had to run to the grocery store to pick up some cans of Rotel and some Great Northern beans and some white sheephead corn because he was craving white chicken chili. Now, on our way to the grocery store, we see one of those little parking lot carnivals, you know, that are parked out there. And we decided on our way home we were going to bring back some fun and excitement from our youth. And I'm telling you, we stayed at that carnival and had so much fun until they shut it down. And then when we got home that night, we still needed to put away the canned goods. But I'm telling you, we were Twitter-pated on love and cotton candy and blinking lights and twirly rides. And my husband thought that I needed to improve my pitching arm because I had not knocked down one milk can with the softball at the carnival game. And he said, here, pitch those cans to me. So I'm standing across the kitchen and I'm pitching him can after can, and it is all fun and games until my husband gets hurt. Now, I don't know what happened, if our timing got off, or if there is a different dynamic between regular size cans and those little cans of white shoe peg corn, but I threw that can at him, and instead of catching it, bam, it hit him right above his left eye, and boom, he went down like a sack of potatoes, and blood started gushing out of his head. Now, I'm going to tell y'all right now, I cannot handle the sight of blood. So I turn away and I grab my phone though and I call 911 and I do start hollering his name. And he is not answering in words, but I knew he was still alive because I could hear him moaning. I also knew I had to get pressure on that wound, but there is no way that I can see or touch that blood. So while I'm talking to the 911 operator, I go get one of our giant beach towels and a plastic garbage bag because there is no way that I can risk that blood soaking through that towel. And I am really multitasking and distracted, and that 911 operator asked me what happened, and I don't think a thing about it. I tell him, I hit my husband upside the head with a can of shoe peg corn. Now, I have the presence of mind to know exactly what was in that can, but not the presence of mind to add the word accidentally. And apparently, hitting your husband upside the head with a can of shoe peg corn sends off the alarm bells at 911. So this operator not only sent out the ambulance, he sent out the police too. Now, I had already told them I had unlocked the front door and that we were in the kitchen, so the police walk in and see me holding a giant beach towel and a plastic bag over my husband's head. And they think I'm trying to suffocate him. Well, I'm telling you, they snatched me up quicker than I can say, keep pressure on the wound. And I've got my hands handcuffed behind me, and I am being briskly shoved out my front door to a waiting police car with no questions asked. But y'all, I was trying to give them lots of answers. So the next thing I know, I am in the jailhouse. And they are taking my jewelry and my shoes and my mugshot. And good gravy Marie, they didn't even let me run a comb through my hair, and it was still wild from the whippet and the zipper rides. And the next thing I know, they're handing me a jumpsuit and giving me a cavity search and a scratchy wool blanket, locking me up behind the jail cell and telling me the judge will not be in until Monday. Now, at this point, I think I had gone into shock because all I could think about was how this was going to mess up my perfect attendance record at the First Baptist Church. Because I was pretty sure incarceration would not be an excused absence from Sunday school. And I'm in this room, and it's kind of the middle of the night, and the main lights are off, but I can tell I'm in a common room, and then these cells are off the main room, and I tell you, I don't even know what to do. I just sit there with my back to the wall, and I pray that my husband is going to be all right, and that nobody or nothing is going to get me in the middle of the night. So now the next morning comes that we all have to get in line and get a tray of eggs with toast and a coffee. And I'm last in line and I take the only seat that's open. And it is across from a woman who I think looks hard as nails. Now, of course, there's my hair. And then the mascara trails down my face make me look like the wild woman from Borneo. But they do not have mirrors in the jailhouse. So we're sitting there and I am clutching my styrofoam cup of coffee like a life preserver in a hurricane, and that woman asked, "You gonna eat that?" And y'all, I couldn't even think about food. So I just shake my head no and scooch my tray over towards her. And she takes a big old bite of my eggs like she's staking claim. And with her mouthful, she goes, "So what are you in for?" And the first thought in my mind was, "What? people really say that? I thought that was only in the movies. And I tell you, I hesitate enough to notice that every eye in the place is on me. And I don't think I could have ever told a lie, but I wondered what was going to happen when I told the truth. Well, I was charged with assault with a deadly weapon, and I was just about to clarify that it was just one of those little cans of sheephead corn when I heard a gasp from everybody in the room. And I didn't know if that was good or bad, so I just quit talking. Who'd you assault? My husband? He'd go to jail too? No, they took him to the hospital. Well, right then and there, that woman offered me her coffee. Now, I politely declined because my mama had taught me not to drink after other people, but I had sensed a change in the room, and I wondered what was going on. Well, after we had to turn our trays back into the guard, this old, skinny, toothless woman came up to me, and she said, "Honey, child, let me plait your hair." And I'm telling y'all, I was feeling like a hot mess. And you women know, when you're stressed, it is always nice to get your hair done. So I just nodded and sat down at her feet. And while she was finger-combing through all of this, she was whispering in my ear, "That one?" She couldn't get enough money to pay her speeding tickets. "And that one?" She's in for hot checks. And this list went on, and I was thinking, well, these really aren't dangerous women. And then she pointed to that woman who had sat across from me from breakfast and said, "She was mama for getting caught with a little too much marijuana." And then she tore a strip off the cuff of her jumpsuit and tied off the end of my braid and said, "But you trying to kill your husband? That makes you big mama now." I'm telling y'all, with that little piece of information, I thought that I was going to be able to survive my stay in jail. But in the meantime, my husband had regained consciousness, got out of the hospital, called up the judge who he plays golf with, and got me released before noon. But I'm going to tell y'all, I was a little sad about that because those women were going to teach me how to paint pictures using the color off the candy shells of M&M's that afternoon. And I was thinking, you know, that might just be a great fun craft for the next vacation Bible school.
Shane Larango. Now, I have to tell you, folks, you might be hearing that and thinking that she just strapped on that accent for the contest she was in telling that story, but that is the true-to-fact way that she speaks. And you know, these liars contests and these lying tales, can you imagine somebody sitting around and creating a story like that? I bet you could tell them exactly the same way, and you might have in the past. I can't really say for sure. I know I have. I've told some lies about, John Deere tractors and traveling with my wife to Mississippi and that time the 30,000 pigs was getting loose on the river in West Texas. And I've even got a story about how the Cadillac got all turned up right in the sand out there in West Texas. And these stories come just like every other story, right out of creativity that people have. And let's hear another first placer. This is old Scott Emmett, and he's coming to us from Indiana. Let's hear old Scott.
I want y'all to know I was raised on the Texas Panhandle on the outskirts of Amarillo. And we lived in the extreme outskirts of town, and where our whole neighborhood was surrounded by empty fields. So I grew up playing in these fields all day long. We'd go out there from sea to can't see every day, never wore a shirt, didn't know what suntan lotion was, and didn't wear shoes. We played all day long, never got hurt. And the fields, all was there was tumbleweeds, but there was all kinds of animals. There were snakes and horned toads. And, oh, by the way, you want to make your sister mad, put a horned toad in her bed. And we had lizards, and we had salamanders, and coyotes, and prairie dogs, and all manner of animals to play with. Now, one story I want to tell you about, this one field we played in had a road, a dirt road wrapped through it. And whenever rain rolled hard, that road would flood. And the water would get going real fast. And what we would do, we'd go to Mr. Store. He had a store down in the corner. And we'd get a number two plastic jug that restaurants buy mustard in. Y'all seen them? Big old round top. And we'd take that down there and we'd put it in the water and collect up whatever was in there, snakes or horned toads or toads or whatever have you. And we capped off chasing girls with it. Had a lot of fun. Well, this one particular time, the water was going real fast. And I put the jug down in there to fill it up, and something real heavy got in there because I could hardly pick it up. It was real heavy, and there's about 10 of us out there. We're all 8 or 9 years old kids. Didn't know no better. Picked this jug up, put the cap on, and you can see the snakes inside of it, but it was so heavy, I think there was a rock in it. So we thought we'd dump the bucket out and see what was in there. Now, y'all get this picture. A bunch of little 8 and 9 year old boys. No sense at all, in a big circle, about to dump this jug full of snakes and whatnot in amongst ourselves. And we did. But once something stayed in that box, and I couldn't get the thing out of the jar, so I turned the jar upside down and I plopped it on the bottom, and out come a full-grown water moccasin. He was wanting to fight right there on the spot, and I was the nearest one to him. And everybody took off running after they wet their pants. And left me stand all by myself with Gary. Gary means by herself with this 9-foot snake looking us in the eye. Well, Gary kicked some sand in that old snake's head to distract him. While he's looking at Gary, I reached down and grabbed him by the back of his head. I picked him up. And as soon as I did, he wrapped himself around my arm. I had a 10-foot snake on my arm. Scared to death, and Gary ran off too. So I'm standing in the middle of the field with a 10-foot snake in my hand. He's trying to bite me, and I'm scared to death. I'm crying. I done wet in my pants too. I didn't know what else to do, so I walked home with a 12-foot snake in my arm. Well, I got home. My mama was a little baby thing. She wasn't but 5 foot tall, and she was raised in New England by a proper New England woman. And I walked in the kitchen, Mama, what do I do? I got a 15-foot snake on me. My mama cried, screamed bloody murder, ran out the door. Left me stand in the kitchen with a 15-foot snake in my arm. And I'm only 9 years old. And he's working around trying to bite me. Well, I didn't know what to do. I walked outside with this, now it's an 18-foot snake, on my arm, trying to figure out what to do with him. I said, well, I get Miss lives across the street from us, and she was married to a railroad engineer. Miss was the meanest woman that ever lived. She was forever more mean. I went over there and got Miss, and I'm crying by him. This is killing me. I'm going to throw my mouth. I'm bubbling. I don't want to say it anymore. Miss, one look at me, looked down her head. How did you do this? I told her. I said, get this thing off, and he's 22 feet long now. What do we do with him? Well, Miss took one look at me, walked over and grabbed my snake and wrapped him up on me and beat him to death with her bare hands and threw him in the trash. Well, my mom started drinking that day. And that's the truth. Thank you.
There you go. That's Scott Emmett with the ever-growing snake. And my very favorite line of that story is, we go outside from sea to no sea, and had that. If you can imagine, you know, that when we was kids, we'd go out and play, and the street lights would come on, it'd be time to come home, and nobody even checked on us back in them days. And those were the days of all the fun the kids had to have. And I remember one time, me and my buddy Eddie, we decided we was going to build ourselves a tree house up in this big maple tree that was outside the property there. We got us a bunch of boards, and we got us a bunch of plywood, and we started up into the tree. And Eddie handed me up one of them pieces of plywood, and I I kind of held it real jittery in my hand there, leaning on those tree branches. And he shinnied up the tree behind me. He's carrying a couple of them big 2x4s. And we plopped them 2x4s down on the branches of that tree and stretched that plywood out across and built us that tree house. That was the finest tree house ever, except we had forgotten the most important part of how we're going to hold these boards together. Well, we were going to decide we was going to solve that another day, and we sat there on that piece of plywood and had the greatest time out there in the woods until the wind started kicking up. And y'all know that wind that comes up from somewhere in New Mexico and blows across a panhandle of Texas and don't stop till it gets to Missouri. That's the kind of wind that we was dealing with. And well, me and Eddie, we knew this was going to be trouble. We just laid down flat on that plywood and hooked our fingers across the side on one side and hooked our toes on the other side. And we figured our weight would help hold it down against the tree. Oh, we figured wrong. And that wind kicked up and started lifting and bouncing and bucking that plywood, and pretty soon one of them 2x4s came out, and we were still balanced precariously on the branches of that tree, holding on for dear life. One more good buck of that wind, and that other 2x4 came out, and that plywood began to fall to the ground with two little boys perched on it. We looked like that scene from Titanic, you know, because there was enough room on that door for Jack. We all know there was. Anyhow, that plywood starts to hurtle down to the ground. The two of us hanging on for dear life. And don't you know, another gust came in from the other direction, raised up the leading side of that board, and we just settled gently to the ground. And we didn't move from that spot for 2-3 minutes, I suppose. And Eddie finally got up and he looked at me and he said, "I'm kind of bored with this treehouse." That is exactly what he said. And now, folks, I hope you've enjoyed our tour of lies and liars and stories like that. We're going to start wrapping up the program tonight, but I want to make sure you keep it right here, because heavens knows KPFT HD1 has got more fantastic programming for you just ahead. And don't forget that it's not too late to become a supporting member of this fine station that you find all kinds of programming on, just like So What's Your Story. And whether you're at home or you're driving home or you're just chilling somewhere, be sure to join us every Wednesday, 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story. You keep on loving good stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Larry Thompson along with the rest of the team. I thank you for listening. And remember what Rudyard Kipling said, if history were taught in the form of stories, it would never be forgotten. Good night, everyone.
Tune in Saturdays at 6 a.m. for the Inner Kid Radio Hour. There's music, science, and really bad jokes. Saturdays, 6 a.m., KPFT.
Houston is the single most ethnically diverse region within the United States. Celebrate at iFest USA, the city's and nation's official celebration of multiculturalism and diversity, held Saturday, May 20th, from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Discovery Green in downtown Houston. Enjoy live entertainment, international cuisine, and cultural